This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Have a listen to this. Have a listen to this.
Interest rates are higher. I know people don't like that, but you should be welcoming a stronger economy.
Maybe a deal has a point about the machinery of capitalism being oiled with the blood of the worker.
The United States is a country that has always paid all of its bills.
Lannister always pays his debts.
Don't let the bastards get you.
And welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam, and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, g'day, Adam. How are we going?
Doing pretty good. I don't know if nobody wants a hat or if maybe we didn't really sell the hat well enough. But we mentioned on the show last week that if people could guess all of the voices in the new intro, that there would be a hat on the line. Well, I can provide an update. I've found a hat. Because it is a form of test, I thought that the most suitable hat would be a baggy green test cricket hat. This is an official baggy green copy I sent off through Weet-Bix many years ago. So it's got a Weet-Bix logo on it. But if you can guess all the voices in the intro, you could be the recipient of a baggy green. So if that doesn't get you going, get you excited, then I don't know what will. I think that's...
I might end it myself.
No, not eligible. Sorry. Hey, budget's out tomorrow. By the time you hear this, it will have been yesterday. Thomas, what's your prediction?
Budget or interest rate announcement?
Oh, interest rate announcement, sorry.
Right, yeah, same.
Same. They're meeting, yeah. The RBA's meeting.
RBA's meeting.
They're talking about some stuff.
Yeah. Mm. 25 basis points and some more funding for aged care.
Right.
Yeah. No, there's no, no funding for aged care. We'll get 25 basis points.
25 basis points. All right, well, yeah. We'll find out by the time you're listening to this whether Tom was right or not. You might want to go and Google it just in case before you take out a home loan, remortgage the house. Just check that Thomas was in fact correct with 25 basis points guess. But massive show coming up, Thomas. The Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, has caused a stir with an essay he wrote over the holidays. As a result, some sections of the Australian media have given him a D- and said he could do better if he just applied himself. We'll take a look at a story of scandal and corruption so big that I don't even know where to start. That terrible pun will make more sense later, hopefully.
You got ChatGPT to write these intros again, didn't you?
Exciting news, we've got a brand new $5 note design just in time for the end of cash, but not everyone's happy. Sorry, no, everyone is happy except one guy. Peter Dutton's not happy. We'll find out why a bit later on. But first, Thomas, everyone knows you don't fight the Fed. So why are markets fighting the Fed?
Well, no, they don't. They think the Fed's rolling over and playing possum, letting the markets run. That was the vibe, yeah. So we got 25 basis points out of the Fed last week. Hmm. That was down from 50 bips in December, so slower. That was largely expected, but definitely the rate hike pace is slowing. And then Jerome Powell came out in his press conference and was just a lot more bullish than people were expecting, really. And, yeah.
Right.
Markets pumped as a result.
What did he
say? NASDAQ was up a full 2% on the day. We had a few things. I mean, basically, you know, so previously he's been saying, you know, inflation's going to stick around longer. Markets are, you know, getting ahead of themselves. But this time he's like, yeah, well, maybe we're all good.
Came out and said, you should buy stonks. get on.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Paraphrasing, obviously. Yeah. But
subscribe and follow me for more hot tips.
Smash that like button.
Yeah, no, so there were five key things saying that inflation's kind of over. We can now say for the first time that the disinflationary process has started. So inflation's going to come down.
Okay.
Number two, there's no recession. I continue to think that there's a path to getting inflation back down to 2% without a really significant economic decline.
Okay.
That's going to nail that soft.
Or positive?
Yeah, nail that soft landing we've been talking about.
Hmm.
Also saying the labour market remains very, very strong and there is strong job creation.
Yeah, so I heard that this morning, like unemployment's still at like record lows in the US. Mm. So isn't that a bad thing for inflation? Like if everyone's got a job and earning lots of money, I thought the road out of this was like getting people to lose their jobs.
Yeah. Well, no, it was if you thought that there was going to be a wage price spiral, which is what everyone was afraid of.
Right.
And people started like trying to, you know, squash the labor market in anticipation of a wage price spiral. Mm. We just haven't seen that. And the disinflationary process has started because the supply bottlenecks are kind of moving through the system.
This is great news then. So inflation's coming down and we get to keep our jobs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That seems to be what he's saying.
Tick,
yeah.
Tick. Nice work, yeah. Jerome.
Number four, saying that the state and local governments are really flush these days with money and many of them considering tax cuts or even spending checks going out to households. So that's good news.
That's inflationary, isn't it?
Well,
tax cuts,
yeah,
and
but
spending checks.
Yeah, it is, but inflation's coming down. And and it's probably going to come down quite quickly. So you can lean into that to protect yourself on the downside. I think that's what he's saying. Like when you look at the positioning, the disinflation's already started without unemployment ticking up. So we've got a lot of headroom to lean into inflation if it does stick around longer.
I don't know, like because all I've heard for the last year and a half has been like we need to fight inflation, stop inflation getting out of control. That's turned very quickly to let's start giving people checks. Did I miss a period where we were just going to roll along on a stable platform for a while and just kind of sit? There was going to be some plateau or something, wasn't there, at the top of the inflation mountain where we were just going to run at a steady state. When did we get to free money for everybody?
Yeah, that was 2 weeks over Christmas. So,
right.
Yeah, it did turn quickly, yeah.
Right. And how did the markets react to that then? They had a field day.
They pumped. Yeah, right. NASDAQ was up. You said S&P was up more than 1%, NASDAQ up 2%, so just pumping along. There was what some people were calling a dash for trash.
Oh, yeah.
So sounded like the trades that were sort of the big speculative bubbly kind of trades of COVID, they were risk on again. So Tesla shares jumped 6% on the day, just in the second half of the day. Their year-to-date gains are now 68%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Cathie Wood's ARK Invest Index ETF is up 6% as well on the day. Peloton and Carvana were up 27% and 32%.
Wow.
Respectively. So
it's 2021 all over again. Here we go.
Peloton, Peloton's up 100%.
Yeah, good bikes.
Good bike, yeah. Good bikes with a laptop.
Bikes with an iPad on the front.
Really, right.
Well, I guess if you need any sign that speculation's back on, it's Bitcoin's up 40% or something too, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's true. Yeah. Yeah, no, store of value, Bitcoin.
So the markets, they got it right? Or what's the downside risks to this?
Happy days. Well, I think the downside from here is that we see earnings come in softer than people expect. That's what you'd need to see for the market to turn.
Right.
So you need to see some even if we avoid a recession, the Fed governor is very unlikely to come out and say we're headed for a recession. Because you then say, well, cut rates then. So he's saying like, even if we are headed for recession, even if you think so, he's probably not likely to say it.
Right.
But it does seem to be the general consensus that the US should avoid recession and Australia as well. So if it does scoot that, then the real downside for markets, I think, is downgrades to earnings. So if earnings come in a lot softer than people expect, that could be enough to sort of take the wind out of the current bull market.
And that's happened a little bit already, hasn't it? Like I think Google's advertising revenue was way down and Amazon weren't doing as well as hoped. I don't know. I don't have any data. just what I heard on Triple M this morning.
Yeah, the general vibe around Meta is a bit meh.
Yeah, yeah. Doggo on the wazoo on the morning show was like, sell Amazon.
But I think that's probably, if we see that more in the retail sector, I guess if you see that sort of like Texas sort of own beast, so if you see that getting into your, like, you know, your Wes Farmers or your Woolworths or something like that, that might start to freak people out. But for now, things are looking pretty good.
Happy days. All right, Thomas, the treasurer, Jim Chalmers, he wrote an essay. What did he write about? Anything I'd like?
Well, you're not a big reader, so I'm not gonna
bore me with the words of the essay. there's some pictures.
It was called Capitalism After the Crises. And basically I think he's out to define his approach as treasurer to let people know what he's about. And I also think it's kind of a bit of branding. Because, you know, like, I follow politics reasonably closely, and before he came treasurer, I didn't really know much about him.
Is it maybe him in a rush to write his own book, write a memoir, but he just didn't have enough content to go off, so he just said, I'll just make it an essay for now and publish my memoirs after I've had a career?
Yeah, Kevin Rudd did a similar thing when he took office. And basically, so like, it's just a big picture. This is my approach. This is what you can expect from me. Just going to sort of lay the philosophy I'm going to do. That's part of it. But there's also a lot of like talking to the political base of the Labor Party. So there's a lot of messaging for that. And then I think there's also a lot of justifications and explanations for the current intervention and the current sort of agenda that the Albanese government's bringing.
So is he writing it as Jim Chalmers, or is he writing it as the treasurer, or is it sort of both? Like, is it representing the Labor Party and what their policies are, or is it more just like, this is just some stuff I had in my head, I wanted to get down on paper, I'm just sort of spitballing some ideas?
No, I think he's speaking for the Labor Party and as treasurer here, for himself, but also, yeah, as treasurer. Like, this is the official narrative now. This defines the way we talk about Labor's economic policy going forward and how we understand it. Yeah, so, yeah, that's where it's coming from.
Okay.
He's calling for values-based capitalism, so idea that sort of free market fundamentalist capitalism has lost its way, has just given us crises after crises, has created a bunch of vulnerabilities and inequality. And we don't need to sort of overthrow capitalism. We like capitalism, or he likes capitalism, but we need to have values-based capitalism. So we need to make sure capitalism is working and delivering on the social values that we like.
Sounds
basic
reasonable.
Idea. Yeah, pretty reasonable. I mean, the conservative press hated it. Part of it was like it was worded in a way that however you wanted to read it, you could read it that way. So if you were progressive looking for like a really firm government intervention going forward, you could take that out of it. If you were pro-business and looking for the government to enable business and not get in the way of business, you could take that spin on it too. It was sort of like, it was enough sort of big picture, hand-wavy kind of stuff that you could read it any way you want. And so the conservative press really read it as, this is communism by stealth. Yeah, right. And we're going back to the bad old days of government intervention. And yeah, so the AFR, which, you know, you wouldn't really place it as conservative or progressive normally, but they've been a bit useless when it comes to the gas cartel. But they ran a full two-page article attacking it, an editorial attacking it, saying it harks back to an essentially old model of more government intervention and higher taxes, camouflaged in the contemporary language of social inclusion. It hardly mentions the incentives, enterprise, entrepreneurship and rewards needed to drive the productivity rebound that's needed to pay for Labor's big spending programs. So they said, yeah, it's an attack on capitalism and an attack on neoliberalism.
Right. What's neoliberalism?
This is sort of like, I guess you could kind of call it free market fundamentalism. It's sort of like...
Oh, that clears it up. Yeah. Free market fundamentalism. Why didn't you just say so?
it's a particularly Australian thing, and it's sort of like it's a term that critics use. Like, no one really says I'm a neoliberal. It's more like critics have accused people of being neoliberals.
Right.
And sort of the basic idea is that less government intervention is always better. You want almost governments to get completely out of the way of markets. The market solution is always the best solution for any social problem.
Mm.
And more markets are always better. That's sort of like, you know, that's the caricature of that. So that's what neoliberalism is. And Chalmers himself said that neoliberalism has failed.
So from his point of view, it's not neoliberalism, but from the critic's point of view, it is.
Well, he's attacking it, and he would call it neoliberalism.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I feel like we're discussing an article that was written by OpenAI in response to the question, please write me an article about economic futures without providing any detail. You know, like, there's one doing the rounds on the internet somewhere where it's like, write me a job description about this without actually ever saying what the job does. And OpenAI gives like this. It's really quite good. Yeah, All right. So in a nutshell, what's his vision for how the economy should work?
So basically he's saying that markets aren't the problem. He likes markets.
Mm.
And, you know, as the leader of Australia, you need to be saying that.
Yep.
But some markets are better than others. And he distinguishes between well-designed markets and poorly designed markets.
Mm.
And saying that, you know, markets, when they're carefully curated and tended to, will produce good outcomes. But if they're just given free rein and ignored, then they can create really bad outcomes. And the bad outcomes we've seen have been a result of that neglect.
That happened with the local bric-a-brac markets down here, actually. Just ignored and just lost their structure. But I feel like New Year, things are going to turn around.
Yeah. Well, get Jim onto it. Jim's markets.
I like markets. I love a good market. Right.
So the four interesting things that I pulled out. One, that to make well-being a focus.
Mm.
So Labor's now going to include measures of well-being in their budget. So alongside GDP and forecasting GDP, they're going to include data on climate and the energy transition, economic resiliency and the sort of strengths of supply chains and quality metrics. Right. So saying like we've got to be measuring those things if we're going to really make good progress.
That's good. I think we touched on that last year, didn't we? Briefly.
Yeah. I mean, that has been a long criticism of GDP as a measure, that it's just about how much stuff we produce and doesn't actually get to the quality of living.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think that's a positive. Two is we need stronger institutions. So markets don't exist in a vacuum. They exist within social infrastructure. So that how strong and integral though that social infrastructure is will determine how well the markets work. Mm-hmm. You see like things like the Integrity Commission and stuff like that's going to feed into that. Big theme for him is coordination and co-investment. So like co-investment, he cites the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, where the government gets in and invests in enterprises that deliver social goods, social needs, and rather than providing it themselves, it's more like we're going to coordinate other entities to do that, or we're going to co-invest and get that happening. So we're sort of still supporting the market to do its thing, but we're going to be active in it. It's sort of the Chalmers doctrine, are you saying?
And was that the end?
Yeah. I'm summarizing here. I asked ChatGPT to give me a 200-word summary.
Didn't really reach a climax, did it? It was very sort of middle of the road the whole way through. So it all sounds pretty positive, though. I mean, I guess it depends, again, on your perspective, but it sounds there's nothing in there that I'm like, what? he's taking our jobs.
Yeah, that's right. It's an essay for everyone. It's not designed to freak people out.
Mm.
I mean, there's still some big problems there within it. Like there's still a focus on growth and productivity. I think there's a really valid questions about do we need more growth? Growth seems to be one of the key contributors to the climate crisis and our fixation with growth. We only need growth to keep people employed. Maybe we start need to having a conversation about how do we keep people employed or keep people in their livelihoods without continually, endlessly expanding the amount of stuff we're producing.
Mm.
I think that's missing. There's still not questions about with the Clean Energy Finance Corporation and the energy transition, that's great if the problem is a technological solution. So you can get in and fund the new technology and the distribution of the new technology. But a lot of the big social problems we have aren't crying out for a technological solution. you know, like the protection of koala habitats, for example, that's not a problem because we don't have the technology. That's because of other factors, and we need to, like, you know, slow down the consumption of old growth forests and things like that.
Not if you go to Bribey Island. They have applied a technological solution to koalas' habitats. They built a rope bridge across the main road so that koalas can cross the road safely. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I don't know. It could have just been one of those green initiatives that they had to do, because I don't know. I think the project probably lacks funding, like the education of koalas component around utilizing the new rope bridge, using the koala crossing to cross safely, all those kinds of just basic education tools for koalas in the area to let them know that A, the rope bridge is now in place, B, how they can use it. Because they put like a, it's quite comical, they've put like a, it must be like 20 metres of fence along the ground to encourage animals to use the rope bridge that goes across above. But, yeah, it obviously assumes that the animals are already within that 20 metre zone.
No, they go hand in hand with long, long fences, right?
Yeah, but not on Bribey. This is so just up near Brisbane when I visited Mum.
Yeah, no,
so
you're
the
right.
The fence is 20 metres long. I think some government department got a ticket in a green box somewhere for a green infrastructure project.
All right.
So koalas aside, though, what are the market implications for this paper? Anything?
Well, I think I'm kind of hopeful that we'll see more intervention in the gas market.
Mm.
There's a lot here that would justify what the government has announced so far.
Mm.
And I think that's good news for the Aussie economy. It's good news for Aussie businesses, for every other business other than the gas producers, given that how much that feeds into the overall economy. So I think that's a potentially a good thing. One analyst said it might mean more regulation for the banks. They're often a sort of a popular target for this kind of thing. So that might be, you know, banks might see some more regulation down the track. But apart from that, I don't think, there's a lot of sort of hand-wavy stuff, and really the devil's going to be in the detail.
And I got to admit, like, calling it an essay, you lost me already, Jim, sorry. Boring. Sounds like too much like school again. All right. Hey, before we get to the break, I do just want to get to a listener email that we got, or Jordan actually sent us a message via Instagram at CVE Podcast. Tommy, he called you out on the, I think, our last episode. You said that inflation has become an excuse to justify price gouging on rents. Or landlords price gouging on rents. And he was just wondering why it's any different. Like, presumably landlords have taken a hit in terms of how much it costs with inflation, and all their costs are going up. So isn't it justified for them to raise rents in the same way that someone who's, I think he used the example of selling, you know, if beef goes up in price, then you need to raise the price of the steak that you're serving at the business. So care to comment?
Yeah. I mean, that's broadly true. The thinking's broadly true, but it's just more complex than that. Mm. And probably like the counter example to understand is why rents didn't go down when mortgage rates went down.
Right.
You know, so mortgage rates went down, that should have pushed down the landlord's costs, but they didn't pass that on through lower rents. Rents actually went up through COVID.
Right.
So it's just not that simple. Kind of the way I think about it is that production costs set the lower bound of a price, mm-hmm. and demand sets the upper bound.
Okay.
So if costs rise, you know, for your beef or whatever rises too much and you can't supply it at a certain price, you know, below which you're just out of business, and so you just exit the market. So that creates a lower bound. But then once you sort of pass that, then it's really about how much people are willing to pay. And if there's a sudden trendy surge in demand and people are really wanting your product, then you can get away with charging more prices, then higher prices, then you will, and prices go up. And I think that's what we're seeing here, is that we're well above landlord costs. You know, most landlords in the market as a total stock would have purchased their property well before rates went down and then back up again. Like, we're still not even normalizing, like, official cash rates, you know, in the threes still. It's still very low. So most landlords for the stock of the market shouldn't be out of pocket just based on that. They've got rates have gone down and then back up again. They should be about where they were. Rents are going up because they can get away with it, because there's that much demand in the market. And right. So it's that demand that's setting the upper bound for prices, and that's where we're at. And, you know, landlords can get away with it, so they do.
I hope that answers your question, Jordan. We're going to take a short break here, grab a quick word from this week's sponsor, and be back with more Comedian versus Economist right after this.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. You're on Comedian versus Economist. And Thomas, the Adani Group is in a bit of trouble. What's going on there? I noticed the Dive are also talking about it this week, so it must be a big story.
Yeah, big story. Their finger's always on the pulse over at the Dive. So basically a short seller came out and released a big short selling report on Adani. So Adani should be pretty well known in Australia. It's an Indian company led by Gautam Adani. He was the third richest person. Well, at some point, the second richest person. I think he's now down to 21, I think.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, ouch. Yeah.
imagine being only the 22nd richest person in the world.
I know. You just give up, wouldn't
struggle
you?
Struggle
street. Yeah. So Dani's like, it's interesting because it's a massive conglomerate. So there's seven listed companies on the Indian Stock Exchange. So seven separate companies. Has all sorts of interest from ports, power plants, airports, data centers, cement, media. It includes Adani Enterprises, which is why it's famous in Australia, because they own the Carmichael coal mine in Queensland.
Right.
And they were big, the Stop Adani protests.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the biggest company in India, like they're the national champion of India.
A bit like Wirecard was the national champion of Germany some years ago.
Yes. Yes. Eerie parallel. Yeah. So then Hindenburg Research and came out.
No. Yeah. It's not a good omen when Hindenburg starts looking at you.
Yeah, yeah. So Hindenburg Research are a short selling institution. Your short sellers, they come out, they publish attack pieces on companies that say they're frauds.
Mm.
This one of the things that brought down Wirecard as well. And, yeah, so they've come out and said – so Hindenburg they were famous because they shorted Nikola, the truck maker Nikola. We did a story on them last year.
Yeah.
Just sort of basic corporate fraud. But it was Hindenburg that brought Nikola down.
Right.
And so they got a reputation in the industry. And then they came out and said, oh, we've got a big story. Everyone's like, ooh, okay, you brought down Nikola. What's it going to be?
They also shorted Tesla, not Tesla, Twitter.
Twitter.
Yeah, which is still, I don't know. I heard Elon Musk said they're returning to neutral or something. They're not profitable, but they've stopped making losses.
Okay, there you go.
Okay.
So yeah, they got some runs on the board, but then they came out. They released a report called Adani Group: How the World's Third Richest Man is Pulling the Largest Con in Corporate History.
Oof.
Mm.
Them's fighting words.
They are fighting words indeed, saying that Adani Group has engaged in brazen stock manipulation and accounting fraud.
Right.
Yeah, and they released a very detailed report. It's 132 pages, just full of data and accusations.
It's longer than Chalmers' essay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that said, they spent 2 years on the investigation.
Right. What are they accusing them of? Just massive fraud.
Massive fraud. I mean, there's a lot to it. Mm. Saying the company's sort of risky, they've got very high leverage, which puts them on a precarious financial footing. They use equity as collateral, which we saw with the collapse of Sam Bankman-Fried and I've already forgotten the name.
FTX.
FTX, that's right. So it was just inherently risky.
Mm.
So they're saying they're worried about that. But the key accusation of sort of wrongdoing that seems to be in there is that they have undisclosed related party transactions. And so the basic idea seems to be that they've set up these shell companies in Mauritius, 38 of them, owned by Vinod Adani, which is Gautam Adani's older brother.
Mm-hmm.
And those companies own a lot of Adani shares but don't declare that they're controlled by Adani.
Right.
But, yeah. And so there's this idea of the free float. So like in India, all shares that owned by executives, board members and their families has to be less than 25% of total shares.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you know you've got a liquid market and the share price is determined by actual trading. They're saying if it's more than 25%, it's 30% in Australia. But if it's more than that, if more than 25 or 30% is owned by insiders, then you can't really trust the share price as being an accurate reflection of the company because insiders are controlling too much of the market.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And so all of those seven companies flirt very close to that 25% threshold already.
Right.
Like they're either right on it or just a few, 1 or 2% from it.
Mm.
But what Hindenburg reckon is that all these shell companies are called independent share owners of these companies, but they're not actually independent because they're controlled by Adani's brother.
Ah, right. So they might own 60, 70% of shares.
Yeah.
Or we don't know.
Well, and they actually accuse them of pumping the share price by like actively manipulating the market and buying at particular times in order to push up the share price.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the fraud element that they're accusing them of.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did this go down with Adani? Did they get upset?
They weren't happy.
No, yeah. I imagine.
Yeah. No. So they came out. I mean, the playbook seems to be to come out like Wirecard did, come out and attack the short sellers as committing fraud and being horrible people.
Mm.
And that Adani went with this, played the nationalism card, saying this is not merely an unwarranted attack on any specific company, but a calculated attack on India, the independence, integrity and quality of Indian institutions and the growth story and ambition of India.
Right.
I mean, and to be fair, they did publish their report on Indian Independence Day, just like when they got their independence from Britain. So
right.
The timing was a little bit odd, but it also...
Hindenburg's not a British firm, is it?
No,
because they're American. That would be even colder.
Yeah.
All right.
And Hindenburg came out and said, well, the reason they timed that report because Adani was in the market trying to raise $2.4 billion of fresh share market capital. And
from themselves.
From themselves.
It was a particularly good time when you're buying your own stocks to point out the fact that you're buying your own stocks.
Yeah, so Hindenburg said, no, to be clear, we believe India is a vibrant democracy and an emerging superpower with an exciting future. We also believe India's future is being held back by the Adani Group, which has draped itself in the Indian flag while systematically looting the nation.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, the thing I find really fascinating about the way short sellers are operating now is they're really flamboyant because the more attention they get, the more that pushes down the share price. So they have a strong incentive to be really colourful with their language.
Yeah.
And that's what you see like with the title and all the accusations. And they're also saying like, and they're kind of confident, they're saying like, they would say, bring on, like if you want to sue us, bring it on because we're registered in America, which means you need to come to America and then you need to present a whole bunch of court documents, which we would love to see. So bring it on is what they're saying. Yeah, very interesting. And Adani's been smashed by it. So they've now lost $100 billion in enterprise value over the seven listed companies. Yeah, so, yeah, just getting smashed. Adani
is that a lot for them though? Is $100 billion a lot? I mean... It sounds like one of the biggest conglomerates in the world, $100 billion.
No, yeah, we're talking something close to like 30 to 50%.
Ah, right. Yeah.
Now, depending on the – yeah, so Adani Enterprises, which is the one we're talking about, owns the Carmichael mine, that's lost 50% in 5 days.
Right.
So,
they're
getting hammered.
Well, I mean, that's it. That's not it. Financial advice.
Is that ChatGPT getting you again?
Get out of here, ChatGPT.
I mean, Adani Enterprise is down 50%. It was up 1,355% over the previous 5 years.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, like it's just been going gangbusters.
Mm.
And that, but Hindenburg's saying like a lot of that just comes down to fraud.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're getting hammered. 7 of the 10 worst performing stocks in the MSCI Asia Pacific Index are now Adani companies.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then they pulled that $2.4 billion capital raising. They just canned it. So like, that's actually not a good time to do
not,
that.
Not a good time to be buying our own stocks. This is it's not the right climate. No. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, the people holding the Stop Adani signs will be happy.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. The mine got ahead. Started exporting in 21. Yeah.
Or did it? Maybe it's just a big, maybe it's a front for. So are there any other market implications here?
Well, I think it's just really interesting for India overall because this is an Indian champion. It's kind of like Wesfarmers or BHP getting accused of massive fraud. Yeah. And then if it turns out to be true, then everyone looks at the Australian market and goes, whoa, what's going on there?
Mm.
And I think it's the same story in India. Like if this turns out to be true, I think then it raises some governance questions around the Indian market and how secure investor funding is. And that might create some problems. I mean, it's also already creating problems for like the people lending and exposed to Adani. So the State Bank of India is down 11% since the report came out because they've got big exposure to India. So it's hammering Adani, but it's bleeding into the Indian market overall, which then bleeds into your emerging market and your Asia Pacific indexes as well. So
is it in any way like the Chinese property developer? What was the one that went down?
Evergrande? Could be.
Because they were talking that was going to be the end of the whole world. Like if Evergrande went under.
Yeah, I don't think Adani has the same kind of interconnectedness that Evergrande has or had. So right. I haven't seen anyone fretting about that. I've read probably a dozen articles about this, and no one seems to be raising that as an issue.
Right, maybe because Evergrande was made up of actual companies, and Adani's just lots of names on lots of paper. Watch this space. All right, finally, Thomas, on the show, we're talking about the $5 note design. Someone's not happy with the new design of the $5 note. What's going on?
Yeah, so the RBA has announced that there's going to be a new design for the $5 note. We knew that something was coming because the Queen died, so it didn't make sense to have her face on it anymore.
Yep.
Though it doesn't stop the Americans. They've got dead people and their money.
Arguably, it's a nice sort of legacy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you could argue that point. I wouldn't, but...
No. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so they're announcing a design that honours the culture and history of the first Australians, is how they said. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so it's at least some sort of Indigenous theme. They're not going to go with a particular person. So, you know, there's some calls for Archie Roach or something like that to go on the money, but that's not going to happen. But they are going to go with something Indigenous themed.
Okay.
Somehow.
Sounds good. What's the problem?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so... Well, Jim Chalmers was out. He says he likes it, says it strikes the right balance. You got the monarchs on the coins and Indigenous Australians on the notes. So he feels like that's a nice balance.
Yep.
But Peter Dutton hates it. He's not happy. He's grumpy. We've got Grumpy Dutton saying it's another attack on our systems, on our society, and our institutions.
It's a $5 note, Peter. Yeah. I feel like we're arguing about who should be on the cover of the White Pages. Like, we're barely even using it anymore.
He says, I know the silent majority don't agree with a lot of the woke nonsense that goes on. We've got to hear more from those people online, and business leaders have to speak up against it as well.
What?
Yeah, so really call it, I mean, surely this is the number one item in the Wesfarmers board meeting.
Yeah.
What's our position
on the $5
note?
$5 note design?
Time we took a stand.
Yeah. It is a strange one, isn't it? Like, you know, like for Dutton to be so kind of outspoken. Like, is this really the hill you want to die on? Is this this is your hot button issue?
I know, read a room, right? Like, you've just got massacred by the Teals independence in the cities. And you're gonna go like, no, I don't think we should honour Indigenous Australians on our money.
On our money, yeah.
I think we should stick to foreign monarchs. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. And we're going cashless anyway. So, and the king's on all the coins, right? Which, like, whatever. Right. Coins aren't going to last. They'll be lucky to see the year out. With the way inflation's going, $5 probably won't be around a whole lot longer than coins.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, Maybe people should just get like, just put like the king's head as his phone wallpaper when he's like tapping and going. So every time we pay waves, just have it.
Show that to the cafe staff as you pick up your latte.
Look, it's the king. Oh, yeah, nice one. Is your name Peter? Small soy latte? All right, we might leave it there, I reckon. That's a fun note to end on. Pardon the pun, fun note. Look, don't forget the Equity Mates have their community survey out and about, so we'd love it if you filled that in. It's a chance for you to win $500 cold hard cash. And a second prize of 3 tickets to FinFest 2023. FinFest happening November the 11th at the Carriage Works in Sydney. For anyone who was there last year, it was an awesome event to be part of and just to see. Head over to equitymates.com for where you'll find links to both of those things. But that's it for us for this week. Thank you so much for listening once again, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. It's bye for now.
You have been listening to an Equity Mates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. Equity Mates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.